Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia extradites a former Sierra Leone police chief to Freetown.
We can confirm that the individual being apprehended in Liberia has been returned to Sierra Leone and is currently supporting the security forces in their investigations.
Malawi declares a deadly cholera outbreak is no longer a threat. Botswana seeks pharmacists from abroad after nurses stop dispensing medications. An analysis of this week's heavy fighting in Ethiopia's Amhara region. A presidential aspirant withdraws from Zimbabwe's August 23rd elections.
When there is selective application of the law against us, we must react, and we have reacted. We are not going to be part of blessing of this sham. This election is a farce.
And experts say gender-based attacks this year mean there is nothing to celebrate on Women's Day in South Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa.
On Monday, seven members of the Sierra Leonean army were spotted on the grounds of Liberia's Temple of Justice, which houses the country's Supreme Court and legal offices. This is where it is said that authorities were allegedly working on airstrip.
The government of Liberia has confirmed the arrest of a former police chief of Sierra Leone who is accused of involvement in a failed coup against that country's president, Julius Maada Bio. Denise Nipsey has more from Monrovia.
On Monday, seven members of the Sierra Leonean army were spotted on the grounds of Liberia's Temple of Justice, which houses the country's Supreme Court and legal offices. This is where it is said that authorities were allegedly working on extraditing former police chief Mohamed Touré, also known as Yete Yete. The Liberian National Police said he was arrested after a tip-off from a Sierra Leonean counterpart. The newspaper Front Page Africa says he had been residing in Liberia since March 2022 after he and others were dismissed in May 2020. The paper says many believe their dismissals were based on ethnic differences. The French press agency AFP says Sierra Leone authorities claim he, 14 soldiers, and three police officers are suspected of a coup plot planned this month for Sierra Leone during the anniversary of fatal riots in August 2022 that left 30 people dead. On Tuesday, Liberia Information Minister Ledger Houreni disclosed that Touré has been extradited to Sierra Leone in accordance with protocols between the two countries.
As I speak, he's been removed from the territory of Liberia and returned to the Sierra Leonean authorities yesterday. In keeping with protocols that we sign as a government. And we're under obligation under international law to do so. Especially so when you sign these protocols. It's the 1986 Non-Aggression Security Treaty among the governments of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. And also under the 1994 ECOWAS Convention on Extradition, we're under obligation also to act in accordance with the request of the Sierra Leonean government.
Sierra Leone Information Minister Cherno Ba confirmed that Touré was back in the custody of his government.
We can confirm that the individual being apprehended in Liberia has been returned to Sierra Leone and is currently supporting the security forces in their investigations. And what the police and security forces have briefed us on, and they uncovered plots by groups of Sierra Leoneans both in and outside of the country to essentially subvert the states. So some chaos, havoc and violence against peaceful citizens and those individuals. Their plan has been uncovered.
Councillor Dempster Brown is the chairperson of the Liberia Independent National Commission on Human Rights. He says he's concerned about Touré's safety and that extradition contradicts Section 8.3 of the Criminal Procedure Law and the Geneva Convention.
This man, life would be at stake when you send him back. During the trial, whether he will be given transparent justice. That's the human rights aspect of the whole thing. So we are saying, no, you can't do that, the government, that this man should remain here and be tried here. But our advice is that under the law, Liberia cannot send him back because there is no extradition agreement between Liberian government and the Sierra Leone government.
Liberians are asking why their government who agreed to turn over Touré to the Sierra Leone government when Sierra Leone refused a few years ago to extradite popular Liberian talk show host Henry Costa to authorities in the Liberian capital. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nepsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
As Zimbabwe prepares for general elections later this month, presidential candidate Douglas Wanzora of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC, has pulled out of the race, citing an uneven playing field, while another independent presidential aspirant is fighting in the courts to remain on the ballot. Rutendo Mawere in Harare has the story.
Announcing his withdrawal from the race on Tuesday, Wanzora said the refusal by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to accept nomination papers for 87 of the party's National Assembly candidates meant that even if he wins, he would not be able to control parliament. The Electoral Commission says all 87 failed to pay their registration fees on time. Wanzora says the commission is treating his party unfairly.
When there is selective application of the law against us, we must react, and we have reacted. We are not going to be part of the baptism. We are not going to be part of blessing of this shame. This election is a farce.
With Wanzora's withdrawal, this marks the first time since the formation of the MDC that the party goes to elections without a presidential candidate. 24 MDC party candidates successfully filed their nomination papers and will continue to participate in the elections. Presidential candidate Xavier Kasukuwere, who had turned to the Constitutional Court in Zimbabwe to remain on the ballot, has been denied direct access to the court on his appeal. Kasukuwere was in the inner circle of the late President Robert Mugabe, who was ousted in a military coup in 2017. He lives outside the country and filed nomination papers as an independent candidate to run for president in the August 23rd elections. Kasukuwere turned to the Constitutional Court after the Supreme Court nullified the nomination court's decision to accept his papers as an independent candidate. ZANU-PF activist Loved Mangwana had challenged Kasukuwere's nomination, arguing he was no longer a registered voter, having spent over 18 months outside Zimbabwe. Mangwana's lawyer, Tichawana Nyahuma, confirmed the court's verdict on Tuesday.
The court said that this was a disguised appeal from the Supreme Court to the Constitutional Court. Although ordinarily an appeal can lie from the Supreme Court to the Constitutional Court only in a constitutional matter, but in any other matters, there's no appeal. The Supreme Court is the final court of appeal.
While Kasukuwere's chief election agent, Jacqueline Sande, also confirmed the judgment, she was quick to point out that the legal battle is far from over. Sande says Kasukuwere's legal team is going back to the Supreme Court to seek leave to appeal against the judgment that upheld the High Court's decision to bar Kasukuwere from running in this year's presidential election. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere Narare.
A spokesperson for Nigerian President Bola Tinubu and head of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, says the president has now ruled out military intervention in Niger after the military ousted President Mohamed Bazoum in a coup. The French news agency, quoting a spokesperson, says President Tinubu still believes diplomacy is the best way forward to resolve the crisis. Tinubu spoke for the first time since the soldiers behind the coup in Niger defied ECOWAS's Sunday deadline to reinstate President Bazoum or face the possible use of a force. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 9th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Fierce fighting broke out last week across Amhara between local Fano militiamen and federal forces, leading the government to declare a state of emergency and rush troops to the front lines. Amhara is Ethiopia's second most populous region, with more than three times as many people as Tigray. David Monda is a professor of political science at City University of New York. He tells VOA's Douglas Umpuga that the conflict poses a serious challenge to the unity of Ethiopia.
I think it's a very dangerous conflict because it's opening those old wounds with the challenges that modern-day Ethiopia faces. They had the problem least recently with the secessionist movement in Tigray. And now it seems this Amhara challenge is coming up. So it's going to be a very difficult problem for the head of the state in Ethiopia to make sure that they are able to contain the situation, because it can very easily blow up, not only with a bigger crisis with the Amhara, but also it can reignite some of the tensions that we had with Tigray.
There were tensions with Tigray that cost a lot of lives and led to suffering with the people. There was some issues, tensions in Oromo area, and now the Amhara has come up. Why does this leave the federation of the Ethiopian government?
You see, I think it's very complex. Traditionally, the Amhara have had a very preferred position as an ethnic nation within the broader Ethiopian federation. Historically, they've always been viewed with a lot of resentment. And because they are domiciled around Addis and the Addis area, conflict with the Amhara can really complicate relations between the government, not only and the Amhara, but some of the other ethnic groups like the Oromia, who are the majority in the country, but also with Tigray. And let's also not forget that Ethiopia borders Somalia, which is also having its own regional issues. So I think this is really something that the Prime Minister really needs to be careful about, to ensure that the crisis doesn't explode, but more so that this crisis is solved diplomatically, because it would be unfortunate if we had another, you know, prolonged civil war with thousands killed the way it happened with Tigray, and eventually actually the way it happened even with Eritrea, which ended up being an independent country. But this crisis with the Amhara can potentially lead to a very long-term civil war, and actually it can be a threat to the unity of the Ethiopian state.
That was David Monda, a professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Umpuga from New York. With more than 10,000 rapes recorded in the first 3 months of this year alone, and more than 900 women killed, experts said there is not much to celebrate as South Africa marks its National Women's Day on Wednesday. Kate Butler spoke to activists about why South Africa is among the most dangerous places in the world to be a woman and what can be done to change that.
Women's Day, marked every year on August 9th in South Africa, is a public holiday that commemorates a historic protest of unjust laws under the then apartheid regime. Caroline Peters, a women's rights activist, explains.
And it comes from the call to action in 1956 by 20,000 women that marched onto the union buildings in Pretoria singing Watinta Bafazi Watintu Mbokodo, you strike a woman, you strike a rock.
While democratic South Africa now has a progressive constitution guaranteeing gender equality, Peter says an increase in the number of female homicide victims in the first part of this year means it's not a happy holiday.
As an activist that's been a gender-based violence activist that's been working in communities for 30 years, I've never seen the level of violence. The violence on women's bodies has escalated. And so there's a far cry from 1956 to now, when I almost feel like we've got nothing to celebrate.
Police statistics for the first 3 months of 2023 showed 10,512 rapes and 969 murders of women. President Cyril Ramaphosa has said South Africa has levels of gender-based violence that are comparable to countries that are at war, referring to it as a pandemic. Lerand Zutemba, spokesperson for the Ministry of Police, said the South African Police Services, or SAPS, are very concerned about the safety of women.
The SAPS is upscaling its operations to trace gender-based violence perpetrators, arresting serial sex offenders and rapists, as well as ongoing dialogues with men in various communities.
But Mara Glennie, who runs Free Crisis Hotline Tears, noted that women who report rapes are not always assisted adequately.
Women who go to the police station are frequently asked to go home and make right with their partners rather than given the help they need.
Asked why gender-based violence is such a scourge in South Africa, Sismantoa Selepi, a gender equality activist, said current socioeconomic malaise, as well as the brutal history of apartheid, play a part.
I think with these men in South Africa, we are dealing with generational anger that is cascaded down to generation after generation due to poverty and due to the injustice of the past as well.
She says it's vital the government invest in educating men about gender equality in order to challenge patriarchal norms. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Malawi has declared that the cholera outbreak, which killed nearly 2,000 people since March of last year, is no longer a national public health problem. The declaration by the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 and cholera comes after the country registered a decline in the number of cases and deaths in 26 of the country's 29 health districts for the past 3 months. However, health authorities say preventive and control measures remain in force until the disease is eliminated. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera declared cholera a public health emergency in December and called for international help to combat the outbreak. The co-chairperson for the Presidential Task Force on Cholera, Khumbizeka Ndodochiponda, says that the decision to declare the disease is no longer a public health threat comes after 26 districts reported no cases in the past 3 months. Chiponda, who is also Malawi's Minister of Health, said that the remaining three districts had been reporting fewer than 5 cases a day. Maziko Matemba is the ambassador for community health in Malawi. He told VOA the move is a result of a number of factors, including a cholera vaccination campaign the government and its international partners launched last year.
But also, as you're aware, once it was declared, there have been increased surveillance. But also, most importantly, in the president's office under COVID-19, they added cholera as part of the roles of the task force.
Since March of last year, Malawi has been facing what health authorities said was the worst cholera outbreak in history, which has killed nearly 2,000 people. The latest weekly cholera situation update report from the Public Health Institute of Malawi, published Saturday, shows that the country had recorded 58,979 confirmed cases with 1,768 deaths. The report says the districts which are still recording cholera cases are Blanta, Mangochi, and Chikwawa, or in the south of Malawi. Seti Pliminta is health promotion officer in the Chikwawa district. He told VOA the cholera situation was caused by sanitation facilities which were washed away by Cyclone Freddy in March. He says shallow wells are mostly blamed for the spread of cholera, but people cannot take water from boreholes, which are presumed to be cholera-free because its water is salty.
Another thing is our water here in Chikwawa is salty. Even if you drill boreholes, people do not want to use boreholes. So instead, they opt for shallow wells because the water test is a bit good.
Pliminta says there's been a drop in cases because of the efforts they have taken to end the outbreak. Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by ingesting food or water contaminated with bacteria. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Southern Africa is facing a shortage of healthcare workers as some migrate to nations, particularly in the West, for better pay. Botswana has a particular need for pharmacists after nurses last month said they will no longer dispense medications. The country is now aiming to recruit at least 1,000 pharmacists, some from abroad. Kundise Dube in Habaroni reports.
Nurses stopped filling prescriptions to patients last month with the Botswana Nurses Union, saying that doing so was outside their scope of work. The situation has led to congestion at the country's pharmacies and led some patients unable to get their medication at all. Now the government is looking to bring in pharmacists from abroad to fill the void and avert a health crisis. Speaking in Parliament Monday, Botswana's Assistant Health Minister Sithumulile Tshitiso says despite recruiting about 100 pharmacists over the last month, the shortage is still severe.
We only have few pharmacists and pharmacy technicians in the market. In the coming weeks, we would have exhausted the Botswana market, Mr. Speaker. However, we would still not have been able to replace all nurses and midwives that have been dispensing medications from as long ago as the birth of the health system in Botswana. Our local tertiary institutions do not produce enough pharmacists and pharmacy technicians who can be engaged to serve our people.
The Botswana Nurses Union Vice President responsible for labor, Ureditse Gilibakhosi, says it was unlawful for nurses to be dispensing medication and that it is only proper for the government to recruit pharmacists. He says, we applaud the government's move to recruit. We don't have a problem with the government recruiting from outside. He says, this will relieve the nurses who have been dispensing medication, which was outside their scope of work. But Assistant Minister Lila Tshitiso says it will not be an easy task to recruit the healthcare professionals.
We need close to 1,000 pharmacists and pharmacy technicians to have all our clinic and health facilities adequately covered. Given the shortages of these professionals in the market, including regionally, as alluded, it may take up to 5 years to have these numbers if you were just to rely on the recruitment of pharmacists and pharmacy technicians, Mr. Speaker.
Lila Tshitiso acknowledges the nurses' decision has led to a crisis. HIV activist Bonosi Sagadimo says the shortage of pharmacists will negatively impact the distribution of ARV drugs. Botswana is one of the world's highest HIV prevalence, with nearly 21% of the adult population living with the virus.
This issue of nurses stopping the dispensing of drugs is a very bad idea. Most clients have to take public transport to go and get their medications from their clinics, where there are no pharmacists.
Botswana's problem is not an isolated one in Southern Africa, where healthcare delivery has been disrupted by professionals living for better pay in wealthier countries, particularly the United Kingdom. Pondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
And that's it for this Wednesday, August 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you have a lovely day.
Coming up on the next science edition of Press Conference USA, it's a conversation with the former director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci, MD. Hello, this is Rick Pantaleo. Dr. Fauci and I will take a look back at his career in medicine and public health and his efforts to mitigate pandemics such as HIV/AIDS and COVID-19. Listen for it this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next up, the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down the use of affirmative action in college admissions. For decades, U.S. colleges have considered race as one among many factors in selecting a qualified and diverse student body. We hear arguments for and against this ruling and examine the ramifications on higher education and the U.S. workforce. This